Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. As we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for tuning in. Hey, today we have the distinct honor and privilege to be speaking with our special guest, George Mashke. On Monday, May 15th, 1995, everything began to go downhill for George. At the time, he was a 12-year veteran of the U.S. Army, having served in both an active and reserve capacity. He served as an interrogator, strategic debriefer, and tactical intelligence officer, and had continuously held a security clearance since 1983. His encounter lasted some 3 hours with the now deceased Jack Tramarco, who, after retiring from the FBI in 2000, began conducting polygraph tests for the Dr. Phil TV talk show. And at the end of those 3 hours, Tramarco concluded that our guest was a spy, a drug user, and drug dealer. His application to be a special agent with the FBI was rejected, and the false accusations of his deception from his examiner were entered into his permanent FBI headquarters file. The FBI accusations have had life-changing consequences for him. In the last two intense episodes here on Light 'Em Up, we've dug deep and provided you with information that you most likely never knew about the polygraph exam and the polygraph instrument itself. Today, we are bringing you the unadulterated flip side of that coin. George has co-authored a book with Mr. Gino Scalabrini entitled The Lie Behind the Lie Detector. And to any listener that contacts us throughout the 77 countries in which we are broadcasting, we will be providing, as does antipolygraph.org, we will be providing a copy free of charge, completamente gratis, sin ningún costo, to every listener that contacts us after the show and shares at least one factoid about this episode that I know absolutely is going to be smoking hot. We know for sure that every testimony has value and every voice has the power to give hope. George has continually shared his story to try to help hasten the day that our government ends its misplaced reliance on what he describes as the pseudoscience of polygraphy, a practice he feels strongly has good reason to be prohibited in the private sector for employment purposes. George, welcome to the show. Welcome to Light 'Em Up.
Hello, fellas. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
George, it's our honor. We're really excited about today's discussion, and we're looking forward to it 100%. For starters, George, can you provide for us, please, with a bulleted synopsis, tangible examples, if you would, of how that single solitary event on May 15th in 1995 rerouted, in many ways, the trajectory of your intended life's journey?
Sure. So I took a polygraph for employment with the FBI as a special agent, and also I was applying to be for a temporary job as a contract linguist. So the immediate result was that I didn't get those jobs. I was disqualified from them. And that disqualification, when you fail an FBI polygraph, is actually a lifetime disqualification. There's no second chances.
I see.
So I was permanently disqualified from FBI employment. Then the FBI shared that information with other federal agencies, which ultimately led to the revocation of my security clearance by the Army. So it also brought an end to my career as a military reservist. And the other significant thing it did was it sparked my interest in polygraphy. So I was a graduate student at UCLA at the time I took the polygraph. I was working, on a PhD in the Department of Near Eastern Languages and Cultures at UCLA. So I had access to a world-class library. So I went there and read everything I could find about polygraphy. So it set me on the path of researching, learning about polygraphs. I wanted to understand how I could have told the truth and yet failed this test that my polygraph operator told me was 90%+ accurate. I wanted to know how I fell through the cracks. So that research eventually led to conversation today.
I see. I see. Very interesting. Wow. What a journey indeed. George, you had mentioned that make-believe science yields make-believe security. And in the literature refers to polygraph examinations as PDD exams, which stands for psychophysiological detection of deception examinations. You know, say that fast five times in a row. That's a tongue twister. But George, you, you have referred to, for example, phrenology and graphology as codified conjecture masquerading as science. Could you share with our listeners that have now expanded into 77 countries worldwide, is polygraphy a science?
No, polygraphy is most definitely not a science, and that's because of certain shortcomings of the methodology. The first thing to understand is that there's no physiological response that's measured by the polygraph instrument that everyone exhibits when they tell a lie or when they tell the truth for that matter. What the polygraph operators are doing is making inferences that changes in perspiration, in breathing, in heart rate, and whatever they're measuring with the blood pressure cuff, which is not a standard usage of it as used in the polygraph. None of these indices show a certain pattern when a person lies, and yet that's precisely what polygraph operators are pretending to do with a polygraph. I can go right now, if you like, into an explanation of the methodology of how they actually purport to say whether you've told the truth or a lie.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so polygraph operators have come to understand that, you know, even a person who's telling the truth might be nervous when they're on the polygraph and might show some reaction to a question. So they've devised a strategy for trying to determine what's a lie about something serious as opposed to an innocent reaction. So what they'll do is, suppose that the polygraph examination is being done about whether a certain person robbed the bank. So the relevant questions they'll want answers to might be, did you rob the bank? Do you know who robbed the bank? And do you know where any of the money is? And to determine whether you're telling the truth about that or not, they'll compare your reactions to those questions with what are called control or comparison questions. And these will be questions like, did you ever take anything that did not belong to you? Mm-hmm. Or did you ever lie to someone who loved and trusted you? And did you ever lie to get out of serious trouble? It's assumed that these latter questions are ones that everyone will have difficulty answering no without having some doubt about the honesty of their answers. It's assumed that everyone has taken something that didn't belong to them, whether it's, you know, pilfering from work or borrowing something and forgetting to return it. People tell white lies to loved ones to avoid conflict and embarrassment, and people lie to, for example, supervisors or people in positions of authority to avoid trouble.
Absolutely.
Could be, for example, telling an employer that you're staying home sick when actually you've got a hangover because you were out drinking the night before. So what the assumption is that a person who's telling the truth, who didn't rob the bank, is going to show a stronger reaction to these control questions than he will to the questions about robbing the bank or knowing where any of the money is. And conversely, that the bank robber is going to show a strong reaction to those relevant questions about robbing the bank. So the problem with this is that even if you haven't robbed the bank, you might still show a stronger reaction to the questions about robbing the bank simply because you know that these are the more serious questions and that the police suspect you, or you wouldn't be in the polygraph chair to begin with. So you might show a stronger reaction to those questions, even though you're completely innocent. And conversely, if you're a bank robber and you understand the function of these control questions, which, by the way, your previous two guests on the polygraph, Paul Iniotti and Gil Witt, mm-hmm. didn't explain control questions to you. And the reason they didn't is that the public is not supposed to understand the function of the control questions.
I see.
But for the person who does understand what control questions are, you can beat the test by covertly augmenting your actions to the control questions. So it looks like that question about ever lying to get out of trouble bothers you more than the question, did you rob the bank? And then you appear to be innocent. So the thing for your listeners to understand is that polygraphy itself wasn't developed by scientists. Its inventor was a rookie police officer with the Berkeley Police Department, who he assembled the first polygraph instrument in 1921. His name was John Larson. And later, he became a critic of polygraphy, especially as it came to be practiced by police departments across the United States, likened it to the third degree, which actually that was one of the motivations in the invention of the polygraph, was that this would be a way that law enforcement could, you know, solve crimes without resorting to beating suspects, which was a common practice in the 20s.
I see. Yeah, that was exactly going to be my question. Who or whom pioneered the polygraph instrument and exam, and for what purposes specifically was it designed?
So the first polygraph instrument was assembled by John Augustus Larson, who was a rookie police officer with the Berkeley, California Police Department and a student at the University of California, Berkeley Medical School in 1921. And he was inspired by the work of William Moulton Marston, who had published on his concept of a lie detector that functioned solely based on a blood pressure cuff. In Marston's technique, he would monitor the blood pressure cuff while asking a series of questions and then make inferences about whether the person was telling the truth. What Larson's innovation was to make a device that would measure not just the heart rate as measured with a blood pressure cuff, but also would measure breathing through a pneumograph tube, and to make a permanent record of the recordings by scratching tracings onto a roll of what was, I think, called carbon paper. So it was like blackened paper with and a needle would scratch. The trace was on a revolving drum, and the recordings would be scratched into that. That was in 1921, and it was put to early use by the Berkeley, California Police Department, and it soon spread to other police departments across the country.
George, you are the co-founder of antipolygraph.org. What is it? When did you start it? And where can our listeners find it on the World Wide Web?
Antipolygraph.org is a website dedicated to exposing and ending waste, fraud, and abuse associated with the use of polygraphs, or purported lie detectors, I should say. It was started, actually we went online on the 18th of September, 2000, and you can find us online at simply antipolygraph.org. That's antipolygraph without a hyphen, .org.
At the turn of the millennium, you co-authored a book entitled The Lie Behind the Lie Detector. Is there any truth involved in the lie detector, or is it all smoke and mirrors and a charade? And to piggyback on that, and we can unpack these one by one, in your professional opinion, are there scientific shortcomings as it relates directly to the polygraph exam? If yes, what are they?
Yes, regarding the polygraph, no, there's no scientific basis to it. It is smoke and mirrors, and that smoke and mirrors surrounds the public perception that it's a lie detector, that it can determine whether or not a person has spoken the truth. So the scientific shortcomings, as I explained, are, well, that the key one being there's no physiological reaction that's unique to deception, and that the assumption behind it that an innocent person will react more strongly to the control questions and to the relevant questions, that's conjectural in nature, and the technique has not been shown through peer-reviewed research to reliably work at better than chance levels under field conditions.
I see.
So that's a huge shortcoming. What it really amounts to is that the lie detector or the polygraph is a prop for an interrogator. It can be useful for scaring confessions from criminals who think that the machine can read their mind, but it causes a lot of collateral damage in terms of innocent people falsely accused, and as well as liars who escape scrutiny because they beat the polygraph.
I see, yeah. And you led me right into my next question perfectly when you mentioned about being falsely accused, because I imagine countless thousands of truthful persons have been falsely accused of lying and suffered serious adverse consequences. And while on the other hand, congenital liars can with ease probably defeat the polygraph and its battery of, quote, tests through countermeasures that you've mentioned, as did convicted spy Aldrich Ames. Now, Now, I have another two-part question. Number one, is it true that liars can beat the test by covertly augmenting their physiological reactions to the control questions? And are there, in fact, any countermeasures that skilled liars can, and not necessarily a skilled liar, you don't have to be a liar, but are there, in fact, any countermeasures that a person can rely on to defeat the examination? And if yes, specify those for us.
Sure. So the short answer is that yes, the polygraph test can be beaten. It's vulnerable to simple and effective countermeasures that polygraph operators have no demonstrated ability to detect. And this is borne out by a study that was done at the Federal Polygraph School in the 1990s. The school at the time was called the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute. Nowadays, it's known as the National Center for Credibility Assessment. And with a large number of examinees who are, so this polygraph school at the time was located at an Army induction facility, Fort McClellan, Alabama. And so they have lots of volunteers from basic training who would come in to be polygraph test subjects. And what they did was to train them in how to beat the polygraph. And the technique they used was, when a control question was asked, to simply pick a large number in your head and then count backwards by threes when the control questions are asked. And using this technique, 80% of the test subjects were able to beat the polygraph.
Wow.
And so rather than making these results public and ending their reliance on the polygraph, and mind you, this was, the study was done around the time that Aldrich Ames was arrested. Mm-hmm. Instead, the government made this study secret, and they hid the results from the public, and they also hid the results from the National Academy of Sciences, which in the year 2001 started a scientific review of the evidence on polygraphs.
I see.
So I've just explained to you one of the ways by which a polygraph test can be beaten, and that's by doing mental arithmetic when the control questions are asked. And that could be picking a, like I said, in the government study, picking a large number and counting back by threes or sevens or any arbitrary number, typically as fast as you can while the control questions are asked. Another technique that you can use is to bite down on the side of your tongue hard enough to cause pain, but not so hard as to cut your tongue.
I see.
And this technique has also been shown to be effective in peer-reviewed research that's available. If you read our book, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, at the end, you'll find there's an annotated bibliography which shows the peer-reviewed research on countermeasures. So what you'd want to look at, if you look under Charles R. Hantz, who was the lead researcher, you'll find the abstract from those peer-reviewed studies cited in full.
I see.
And there are also breathing techniques that can be employed. For example, the simplest one is to simply, when a control question is asked, is to exhale a normal amount, hold it for a few seconds, and then resume normal breathing.
Okay, very interesting indeed. George, does the U.S. government know that polygraphy is unreliable? And if so, why do they rely on it?
Well, it's sort of a mixed bag. So there are agencies of the federal government that understand that it's not reliable. A key one would be the National Academy of Sciences, which in 2002 completed an exhaustive review of the scientific evidence on polygraphs. And the National Academy of Sciences advised that polygraph screening was not accurate enough or reliable enough to justify reliance on it by federal agencies. However, those federal agencies with polygraph screening programs completely disregarded the National Academy of Sciences on this, and rather than terminating their reliance on polygraph screening, they've actually greatly increased it to the point where now, in 2021, a century after the invention of the first assemblage of the first polygraph instrument, the federal government's reliance on polygraphy is greater now than it's ever been in the past.
I see, I see. And is the U.S. government's reliance on this unreliable polygraph machine and its exam, is it strengthening or undermining our national security, and how so?
Well, I would argue that it's undermining national security, and it's doing that in two primary ways. The first is by depriving the U.S. government of the services of thousands of qualified applicants who are wrongly failing the polygraph and who are typically blacklisted for life from government employment that requires a security clearance. And secondly, it's undermining security by letting spies through and helping them to escape detection. In the years that the U.S. government has been relying on polygraph and that polygraph screening, that's basically, or polygraphy in general, from about 1938, when the polygraph was first used in an espionage case, the polygraph has been repeatedly beaten by spies. In the first case in 1938, a spy for Nazi Germany was able to convince the FBI that he was cooperating with them, so they didn't arrest him. They released him to go home based on his promise that he was going to cooperate with them, but instead he got on the next boat to Germany and escaped.
I see.
Then, throughout the years, there's Aldrich Ames and numerous other spies who all beat the polygraph. There's only one who arguably might have been caught by the polygraph, and that was just in, I think, 2020, a Defense Intelligence Agency contractor named Peter Debbins was criminally charged with espionage based on admissions that he made after failing a polygraph screening test.
I see.
However, it's questionable in this case whether his detection can be attributed to the polygraph, because presumably he would have been polygraphed before 2020 as well, in which case he would have necessarily beat the polygraph. In any event, there's numerous instances of spies fooling the polygraph.
I see. Very, very interesting indeed. You know, George, you had mentioned that you listened to the previous two shows regarding polygraphs with Holly Nyadi-Soltes and Gil Witt. And we're grateful to you, absolutely, for listening. We love all of our listeners. Anyone who downloads and listens, we are tremendously grateful to each individual that takes the time to listen to our broadcast. Can you share with us what would be some examples, some specific examples of some things that they may have said or shared that you would disagree with?
Yes. In the first, the notion shared by both that polygraphy has any standing as a scientific test for deception, it's pseudoscience. And second, you asked them both about the possibility of beating a polygraph test, and they both poo-pooed that, suggesting that polygraph countermeasures don't work and that they can be detected. But the fact of the matter is that peer-reviewed research indicates that polygraph tests can be beaten through the use of countermeasures, and that polygraph operators have no methodology for detecting such countermeasures. And so I disagree with them strongly on that, and those claims they made are claims that I don't think they can defend.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair enough. As we move forward, let's talk a little bit about the control question test, or CQT. First and foremost, for our listeners, define to help them understand what is the CQT, and we have a few other questions after that regarding the CQT. What is the CQT?
Right, so the CQT, the control question test, is the primary polygraph technique used by polygraphers in the United States. It's used both for criminal interrogations as well as for applicant screening.
Okay.
And we've discussed earlier what control questions are. These are the ones that it's secretly expected that everyone is going to lie to, even people who are innocent of the crime or who are actually qualified for employment with an agency. Questions like, did you ever lie to get out of trouble? Mm-hmm. Did you ever lie to someone who loved and trusted you? Did you ever take anything that did not belong to you?
Yeah.
So these are examples of common control questions.
Yeah, superfluous questions that anyone would, if they're being honest, would, who has never told a lie? White lie, big lie, lie. I mean, come on. I mean, these questions seem to have no foundation in reality, it seems to me. Number one, is the CQT, is it the most widely used format in the U.S.?
Yes, the CQT is not only the most widely used format in the U.S., but internationally. So maybe we could speak briefly about a major exception to that.
Sure.
There are two intelligence agencies, the CIA and the NSA, and they've been using polygraph screening respectively. I think the CIA started in 1948 and the NSA in 1952. And the CQT was just being developed around that time. The NSA and the CIA got their training from a fellow named Leonard Keeler, who instructed in what's called the relevant-irrelevant test. So not a CQT. And so for the past 70 years, the NSA and the CIA have been using the relevant-irrelevant test for screening applicants and employees. And so where that differs from the CQT is instead of using control questions, they just ask relevant questions mixed with irrelevant questions.
I see.
And what they're looking for is if you consistently show a strong reaction to any particular relevant question, they assume that you're lying about that relevant question and interrogate you about it.
Interesting. Wow. Are there any dirty little secrets that we need to know about that lie behind the polygraph test as it relates to the CQT?
Yes. And the reason that our book at adapolygraph.org is titled The Lie Behind the Lie Detector is precisely about this lie, the lie that the control questions are important, as important as the relevant questions, and that they must be answered truthfully when it's secretly expected that your answer is going to be a lie. So the whole polygraph technique depends on convincing the subject that the control questions are actually relevant and germane to the investigation, and that they're just as important as the relevant questions when the opposite is true. So now what we have done basically is to ruin your entire audience as candidates for a polygraph test, because they know the true function of the control questions, which is for comparison purposes with the relevant question.
I see. To piggyback on that series of questions, would I be at all close in saying that the CQT is not so much a test, but more of an unstandardizable interrogatory interview?
Yes, that's correct. And that's something that my late friend psychologist, John Fierity, was fond of saying, where a test is a standardized, you know, psychometric test, like an IQ test, where it's the same for everyone. Whereas with a polygraph, everyone is different, and everyone gets a different pretest interview, a different list of questions in most cases, and the post-test interview or interrogation can be widely different. So there's a sort of pattern that's followed, but it's not truly standardized the way a psychometric test would be.
Okay, that's understandable. I see what you mean. In my teaching of criminal justice and forensic science, I know for certain, and in the application of the law, there's no better ferreter of the truth than the crucible of cross-examination on the witness stand. You know, on Perry Mason, I always love to see the witness crumble after the blistering cross-examination of Raymond Burr. Now, in your opinion, are polygraph tests actually interrogations?
Yes, for the most part. It's an interrogation using the polygraph instrument as a prop.
I see. And why can't an interrogator simply interrogate without the reliance of an instrument that measures and records several, for example, physiological indicators such as blood pressure, pulse, respiration, and skin conductivity? Why can't they just ask their questions without an instrument that measures those things?
Any competent interrogator can do an interrogation without the polygraph instrument. There's no reason why an interrogation can't be done without using a polygraph.
Okay. Are all polygraph operators trained interrogators?
Yes. For example, many of the federal polygraph operators who are trained at the Federal Polygraph School are selected based on their interrogation skills to be sent to a polygraph school. But even those who don't have previous experience as interrogators will be trained in interrogation at polygraph school. In fact, that's the bulk of the time of polygraph courses is not on how to run the polygraph instrument or to read the charts, but focuses more on interview and interrogation techniques.
I see. And you touched on this briefly, I think, in one of your previous answers. Is the polygraph exam pretty much dependent on the examiner lying and deceiving the subject that's being examined? And if so, how so and why so?
Yes, every polygraph. One of the things we say at antipolygraph.org is that in every polygraph test, at least one person is lying, and that's the polygraph operator. The deceptions include, first, the very notion that the polygraph has any validity as a lie detector. It doesn't. And then the polygraph operator will be lying to the examinee about the function of the control questions. And then a common lie that's told is often, especially more so in criminal investigations, the subject may be told that he failed when a reading of the charts would say otherwise.
I see. Interesting. Very interesting.
By the way, that's also true in many pre-employment polygraphs, especially with agencies like the CIA and NSA using the relevant technique. There, virtually everyone fails their first polygraph session and then is invited back for a retest.
I see.
So they're using the polygraph as, you know, really as a prop to browbeat admissions out of applicants.
Wow. that's a tremendous way to treat your potential employees. Wow, that's interesting. Let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits the government from compelling a person to reveal to the police, prosecutor, judge, or any jury any information that might subject him or her to criminal prosecutions. And in custody interrogations, we're talking about, for what purpose does law enforcement use the polygraph exam?
When a person has been arrested, or whether they're actually in custody or not, it applies in both cases, a suspect may be offered the opportunity to take a polygraph test to clear his name. But what's actually going on here is that the polygraph test is serving as a pretext for interrogating the suspect without a lawyer present. And the suspect will be told that, you know, no one other than the polygraph operator and the suspect can be in the interrogation suite, because the presence of any other person would interfere with the intricacies of the test. And that's nonsense. The reason is they don't want a lawyer sitting next to the suspect to advise him of his rights while he's being questioned.
I see. Very interesting. And to your knowledge, does law enforcement infer anything from a person saying no to submitting to a polygraph exam?
Often, yes. They'll infer that refusal to take a polygraph test means that they've got something to hide. They will take it as an indication of guilt.
I see. Say, for example, if a person is charged with a crime and asked to take a polygraph exam, what should that person do immediately?
Again, whether the person has been charged or is merely suspected and asked to take a polygraph exam, that person, whether they're guilty or innocent, would be wise to refuse the polygraph and to retain legal counsel and to not speak with investigators without their counsel present.
Absolutely, to act on their rights, to remain silent.
Yes, to invoke their Fifth Amendment right not to be questioned, certainly not to be questioned without counsel.
Sure. And in the criminal justice process, does, in your opinion, your professional opinion, does a person have anything considerably substantial to gain by submitting to a polygraph interrogation?
No, typically not. By and large, polygraph outcomes are not allowed in evidence in criminal cases in the United States. There are exceptions where both the prosecution and the defense may stipulate to the admissibility of polygraph results. And there have been cases where, for example, when a prosecutor has a weak case, he may tell the suspect that, look, if you'll agree to a polygraph test and then stipulate that the results will be admissible at trial, no matter what the outcome is, then if you pass, will agree to drop the charges.
I see.
And some attorneys may advise their clients to take that deal, but it's a risky deal to take because it'll be the prosecutor typically who chooses the polygraph operator, and the suspect failing may be a foreordained outcome, and they may just use the polygraph results to apply pressure. There's an infamous case in your state of Ohio of a man named Floyd Fay who took such a deal.
Okay.
And he was accused of murder, and he agreed to a stipulated polygraph test, the result which he failed, and he was convicted of murder on that basis, in large measure anyway, on the strength of a failed polygraph test. But some years after his conviction, he was exonerated.
Wow.
His defense attorney did the investigation that the police failed to do, and he was, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, exonerated and was eventually released from prison. So I think that agreeing to a stipulated polygraph is a bad choice in most situations.
So can you refuse, for example, to sign any agreement stipulating that the polygraph results will be admissible as evidence in court?
Yes. Anyone suspected of a crime has the legal right to refuse such a proffer.
Okay. That's good to know. That's excellent information. Is there such a thing as polygraph operator bias? If yes, can you explain what that is for our listeners?
Yes, of course. There's polygraph operator bias, just as all humans have biases. And at antipolygraph.org, when we speak of examiner bias or operator bias in connection with polygraphy, it's information that the operator has going into the test that may influence the outcome that he reaches. For example, in criminal interrogations, the operator will have the case file and will often have a good idea, you know, whether physical evidence or testimony of others points to the suspect's guilt. So that can affect the outcome of the test. That is, when the operator thinks that the suspect is guilty, that suspect is very likely to fail the test. test. Conversely, if the polygraph operator thinks that the evidence points away from that person's guilt, it increases the person's chances of passing. And this also carries over to pre-employment polygraph screening. For example, if the applicant happens to be the chief's son-in-law, well, the polygraph operator may know that things are not going to go well for him if he fails it. And so that applicant may have a better chance of passing the polygraph than other applicants.
I see. In any way, shape, or form, is the polygraph biased against the truthful person? If yes, how so?
Yes, polygraphy has an inherent bias against people who are truthful. And the reason for that is that when you're asked these control questions, like, did you ever lie to get out of trouble? Or did you ever lie to someone who loved and trusted you? And you answer that question truthfully. You make an admission. Say, well, yes, you know, when I was a young child, I lied to my parents about breaking a window. I said I didn't know who did it, but it was me. Or you say that, for example, that you lied to your spouse about some matter and you feel guilty about it. Well, because you've unburdened yourself of a potential feelings of guilt about those questions and may feel less anxiety when answering them during the test, it makes it such that you're more likely to wrongly fail the polygraph.
I see. I know our listeners will be tremendously interested in hearing ways that a person can go about surviving or beating a polygraph examination. And I know you've shared several instances or ways to do so earlier when we were talking. But could you give another brief bulleted list as to some specifics as to what a person can do to employ skills or tactics to try to help survive and beat a polygraph exam?
Yes. And I should preface this by saying that our goal at antipolygraph.org is not to help criminals evade punishment or for individuals to obtain employment for which they're not qualified. And again, our advice for anyone suspected of a crime is not to take a polygraph and try to beat it, but to refuse it. Whether you're guilty or not, your best option is to refuse a polygraph and obtain legal counsel to get the best outcome possible for you. But some people are not in a position to refuse a polygraph. For example, like honest people who want to be police officers in many departments in the United States have to submit to a polygraph test. If you don't take the test, you don't get the job. And some techniques that they can use to pass the polygraph, to increase their chances of passing, because it's not guaranteed in any event. It's always a crapshoot. But you can educate yourself about the procedure. And in The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, in Chapter 3, we explain polygraph procedure in more detail than we'll have time to go into in our talk here today. We've gone over the basics of the technique, the difference between control questions and the relevant questions. And in pre-employment screening, the relevant questions are going to be typically, have you ever committed an undetected major crime? Major crimes we're talking about, typically felonies, things that you could go to jail for. Have you ever used an illegal drug? And because many departments now will allow for some minor drug use, that will often end up being worded as, other than what you told me, have you ever used an illegal drug? And the third major area of questioning is, did you omit anything from your application? It'll be about the completeness and thoroughness of your written application. These relevant questions for employment screening will be compared with your reactions to questions like, again, did you ever lie to get out of trouble? Did you ever lie to anyone in a position of authority? And so our recommendation is to make no admissions to the control questions, and indeed to make, assuming as we do, that you're telling the truth about the relevant questions, don't make any admissions to those either. Answer them truthfully, say no. And then when you're asked that control question, to employ a breathing technique, such as breathing out for a few seconds, holding it, and resuming normal breathing, or breathing a little bit more shallowly for a few seconds, and then resuming more normal breathing, or to do a mental technique, such as picking an arbitrary number and counting backwards, say by sevens, or by thinking scary thoughts, such as falling off a cliff or being mugged at knife point. Something that will make your heart race a little bit and produce a reaction that to the polygraph instrument will look like you're nervous when answering that control question. And then to just relax, breathe normally when you're asked the relevant questions. And a third category of questions, which will be irrelevant questions. Questions like, are the lights on in this room? Is today, it's a Tuesday as we're speaking. Is today whatever the day of the week is? They'll tell you that these irrelevant questions are sometimes sometimes they'll even call them control questions in an attempt to try to trick you about what they are. They'll tell you that these show a baseline of what it looks like when you're telling the truth, but these irrelevant questions actually are not scored at all, and they're just buffers between pairs of relevant and control questions. So, again, making those omissions augment reactions to the control questions. That's the Reader's Digest version of it.
Thank you for that. Excellent. That'll prove to be tremendously helpful. George, you've dedicated your life in the service of our nation, and we spoke previously about issues centering around the failing of polygraph examinations that were at the foundation for many Afghan linguistic translators that were not being given any relief in getting out of the country as conditions rapidly deteriorated within Afghanistan, as we've seen recently in the news. A close source for background information for our podcast that works for Al Jazeera mentioned to me that the U.S. government has not done and is not doing all that it could or should be doing to help Afghan translators and those who have helped the U.S. during the 20-year Western occupation of Afghanistan to be airlifted to safety as the Taliban has advanced. Can you share with us your thoughts, if you have any, regarding that on this particular topic?
Absolutely, and I have strong views on this topic. The policy of the U.S. government in Afghanistan has been to blacklist local employees based on polygraph results. And what would typically happen is that, say, someone was working as an interpreter for U.S. forces, periodically they'd have to take a counterintelligence scope polygraph examination. And if they failed, they would be immediately terminated and not given any other explanation for their termination. In fact, typically they wouldn't even be told that they failed the test until sometimes the next day. There would be no post-test interrogation like there would be for a U.S. Employee or applicant. They just, based on the chart readings alone, would be terminated. And this was happening typically like in the early tens, like 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. And then, so these people have been deemed ineligible for special immigrant visas because of the polygraph results. And yet, the Taliban don't care that a former U.S. military interpreter failed a polygraph. They still consider them, you know, to have collaborated with the enemy, and their lives are in danger, and yet we are abandoning them simply because they failed polygraph tests. Because I think that's really unconscionable, and that the policy needs to be changed immediately. Right now, as we're speaking, the U.S. is conducting a major airlift of U.S. citizens and green card holders, as well as some former employees out of Afghanistan. We should stop disqualifying people who served us loyally but were terminated only because of polygraph results. And on antipolygraph.org, we've got personal statements from two such interpreters who served in combat with U.S. forces but lost their jobs simply because of polygraphs. One of them was polygraphed a month after he sustained a traumatic brain injury while on a dismounted patrol with U.S. Army combat engineers. And because of that, they fired him, and he's had no recourse since then. He's just blacklisted. In this case, people may actually die simply because they failed a polygraph test. It's unconscionable.
Sure. I agree wholeheartedly. Let's talk a little bit more about the U.S. government. In 1988, Congress created the Employee Polygraph Protection Act, or I guess it's pronounced EPA or EPPA, which banned the use of polygraphy by most of the private sector. But regrettably, our government exempted itself from the application of this law. Now, there are some industries, for example, such as the armored car companies, also received exemptions. But my question is, are polygraphs required for military service, and for what other areas for employment purposes?
In general, no, you're not required to take a polygraph test to serve with the U.S. Armed Forces. However, there are some jobs in the military that do require high-level security clearances, typically involving access to what's called special compartmented information. This is a category of classified information that's considered very sensitive, typically because the program involves cost a lot of money to develop, and if the security of it were blown, it would be very expensive, but also because it may be very sensitive in terms of strict national security concerns. For example, many people in the military who are involved in signals intelligence may be required to submit to polygraph screening. And within the federal government, similarly, other agencies that require top secret clearance, for example, every employee of the FBI has to submit to a polygraph test in order to be hired, even if it's for building custodial staff. If you're going to be cleaning the building, you've got to take a polygraph test. I guess because potentially, you know, you could be smuggling out documents. Same with the CIA and NSA. Everyone has to take a polygraph test for employment with those agencies.
I see.
So typically, it's jobs, government jobs require polygraph screening when they require a very high level security clearance. One agency of the federal government that is an exception is the State Department, which does not require employees to submit to polygraph screening.
I see. Can you share with us a few of the publications that the U.S. government would not wish were published or in circulation about the polygraph exam?
Yes. Well, one is antipolygraph.org's book, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector. When you go for a polygraph test, say for a job, either federal or for a police department, state or local, you'll typically be asked whether you've been polygraphed before and what you know about polygraphy. And if you tell the polygraph operator that, oh yeah, I visited antipolygraph.org and I read their book, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, that will be interpreted as a huge red flag. They'll typically try to discredit the information we provide on the site, and the book I might tell you, for example, that I failed. I'm the co-author of the book that I failed an FBI polygraph test about espionage. And they might tell you that I now live abroad and even suggest that I live abroad because I'm trying to avoid prosecution in the United States, which is not true. I've been working overseas as a translator for some 2 decades now, but I regularly travel back to the United States and I'm not in any sort of criminal trouble. But your polygraph operator will be very displeased if you've read Lie Behind the Lie Detector, and you may end up being arbitrarily accused of having tried to beat the polygraph test just for having visited antipolygraph.org and having read our book. Another book that they wouldn't like you to read is by the late Doug Williams, who's a former police polygraphist and detective sergeant formerly with the Oklahoma City Police Department. He wrote a manual called How to Sting the Polygraph, which is still available on Amazon.com, and they won't be happy if you've read that either.
Interesting. Very interesting. George, as we get ready to round third base and head for home with our interview today, how can you best, and you've shared a ton of valuable information with our listeners, and we're tremendously grateful to you for that. And you've touched on answers to this question, but for those who might just be joining us, how can you best protect the innocent from, for example, polygraph abuse, and to help strengthen our collective security by exposing, say, any waste, fraud, or abuse related to the polygraph process?
Well, our focus now at antipolygraph.org is on public education. We don't, the website is run out of pocket. We don't solicit donations from the public. We don't have a budget to lobby members of Congress, for example. So our focus is on educating the public. And what polygraph operators don't want is an informed public who understands that it's pseudoscience, it doesn't work, and that it's not in their interest to submit to a polygraph test if they can possibly avoid it. We've gathered a large amount of documentation about polygraphy. If you visit our site, you'll find there's a document vault page, which includes lots of government publications about polygraphy, including documents that have been obtained by us under the Freedom of Information Act, as well as documents that have been leaked to us, including a lot of documents about polygraph countermeasures and the particular polygraph techniques used by various federal agencies for pre-employment screening. So your audience, they can read through those, educate themselves about what they can expect to encounter if they're in a situation where they feel compelled to submit to polygraph screening or a polygraph test, God forbid, in a criminal investigation. And on our news blog, we document cases of waste, fraud, and abuse, including, for example, most recently today, we published the story of a guest on a popular television talk show called Steve Wilkos Show, where a guest in 2018 passed a polygraph saying that they didn't murder a 15-month-old baby, whereas, in fact, earlier this year, the same person pleaded guilty to doing precisely that and was sentenced to life in prison for it. That's what we're doing, is making documents available, serving as a clearinghouse for information on polygraphs, and following news of polygraphy, including cases where innocent people wrongly fail, where liars speak the polygraph, and where federal agencies hide failures of the polygraph.
I see. On our show, we always say that the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately it delivers. And the polygraph exam falls under the large umbrella of credibility assessments, in quotations. The National Center for Credibility Assessments, their motto is justice and security through truth. In any way, shape, or form, is their motto a little misleading if polygraph exams fall under the heading of credibility assessments?
Absolutely, because the polygraph test can't tell whether you've spoken the truth or not. And ironically, the truth is the last thing that the Federal Polygraph School or polygraphers in general want the public to know about polygraphy itself.
Absolutely. Oh, excellent point, George. Excellent point. If you've submitted to and failed a polygraph test and an operator accuses you of lying or some form of wrongdoing, are there any steps as we get ready to close out here that you can take to try to maximize the utility of any process to maybe file a protest or a grievance regarding the process?
Absolutely. Well, first thing to know is if you're accused of lying by the polygraph operator is to make no admission and offer no rationalizations of why you might have failed. And even a common technique that polygraph operators will use is to ask you, well, what were you thinking about when I asked you that question? And the only correct answer to that is I was thinking about your question and my truthful answer. Then if you get to say you were applying for a job and you receive a thin letter telling you that you're not qualified because of polygraph results, you can write back to the person who wrote that letter or signed that letter and contest the results. Just simply state for the record that you told the truth on the polygraph and that the polygraph operator was wrong. And we recommend against offering any rationalizations of why you failed the test because it should surprise no one when an invalid test produces inaccurate outcomes. There's no need to explain yourself for wrongly failing the polygraph. By writing that letter, sending it to the person who signed your rejection letter, it will document, so that letter will be typically added to your applicant file. It will show that you didn't simply, through your silence, accept the accusation that you lied. And especially with federal agencies, that can be important. If you apply for federal employment in the future, your applicant file with the agency that flunked you based on the polygraph, that record is going to be shared with the agency with which you're applying.
Okay, very good. Excellent. We are going to do our part to push out the information from antipolygraph.org, and we're going to also do our part to push out the lie behind the lie detector. And what, if anything, that we haven't covered, what would you like to address maybe in closing before we get out of here?
Well, I wanted to mention that it's possible some of your listeners may disagree with me. Your previous guests who are polygraph examiners, Holly Niotti and Gil Witt, might care to dispute some of what I said, and I'd be happy to debate them either through your hosting as moderator or in any other forum. And I don't bite, so if anyone has any questions for me, I'm happy to address them. We've got a contact page on antipolygraph.org where there are means that we can be reached privately and securely as well.
Excellent. Excellent. George, I want you to know that you will always have a home here with us on Light 'Em Up. You are a tremendous source and resource for information. Me speaking with you has been a tremendous honor, and I am personally grateful to you for your time, your talent, and your expertise. I know for certain that our listeners are going to love this information. We've focused a lot of time on the polygraph exam, and I'm really pleased that we have an opportunity to share the information that you are expert in. We always like to leave the last word with our guest. I'm grateful to you. I want to say thank you to you again, and I'm going to turn over the opportunity to close us out.
Well, thank you, Phil. It's been a pleasure getting to know you and speaking with you about polygraph matters, which is a subject that I'm deeply concerned about. And I would just invite any listeners, if you've been a victim of the polygraph, to consider sharing your experience publicly on antipolygraph.org. You'll find we have a personal statements page where others have shared their experiences, and some using their own names, some anonymously. If you look there, the third statement is my own, so you can learn more about my experience in detail. We also host periodic online meetups to discuss polygraph matters that everyone, including yourself, people are welcome to drop by at. Our next meetup is probably going to be in about 2 weeks, but if you look at our message board at antipolygraph.org, there's a calendar section at the bottom, and there you'll find when the next meetup is scheduled for. And again, our meetups don't require any sign-up or special software, so you can participate anonymously if you prefer. And speaking on polygraph matters, many people do prefer to do so anonymously because of the potential for retaliation if you're publicly identified as a polygraph critic. In my case, the cause for concern is really significant. My security clearance was revoked, I think not coincidentally, shortly after antipolygraph.org went online. I think there was a clear connection there. I don't mind. I'm happy to speak on polygraph matters. And for those who feel comfortable doing so, I encourage you to join us in working for meaningful polygraph policy reform. Our ultimate goal would be to reform that 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act and have it made into a comprehensive Employee Polygraph Protection Act by eliminating all of the government loopholes. So federal, state, and local governments have blanket exemptions to the Employee Polygraph Protection Act. We think that those exemptions, those loopholes, should be closed and that polygraph screening should be barred for all purposes from the American workplace, that public employees should enjoy the same protections that most private employees currently enjoy.
Hey, to all our listeners that are listening to us domestically, we want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And we want to say ciao for now and adios from coast to coast. And to all our listeners that have joined us internationally, we are tremendously grateful to you as well. Hey, this is Light 'Em Up.